Hello and welcome to the very first episode of Geek and Ghoul, All Things Normal and Paranormal. I am Ghoul, and with me today is my co-host.
I'm Geek. Hi, everybody.
So today we're going to start out with some introductions, basically give you a little rundown of why we wanted to start this podcast and what our podcast is all about.
Yeah, so we're going to do some video game content. We're going to talk about any true crime, any paranormal stuff. It's going to be like a glimpse into what we have, what our hobbies are. You know, we like learning about true crime. I love video games. Ghoul likes learning about the paranormal, all of that kind of interesting things. Myself, I am very nerdy as to why I chose to go under the name Geek. I love anime, I love video games, I love talking about that kind of thing, you know. Me and Ghoul, like, info dump with each other. We just talk random stuff. But we're very excited to start this. We've been talking about it for, what, years now?
Years. We started this back when we were in high school, and we were, what is it? What were we doing? We were sitting in your room trying to figure out how we were going to go about this.
Yeah, we always discussed, like, just doing something together to, like, share our interests.
Something to focus on our hyperfixations a lot. And we thought about the name for quite some time. We made our own logo. It was really fun to do that. Definitely had to do a lot of subscribing to things that I didn't need to subscribe to just to make the logo.
It looks hella cool, though.
It really does. It definitely captures our interests at heart. You know, two girls sitting in a graveyard with coffees. Just, that's amazing.
Yeah. We grew up watching Ghost Adventures together, like, during our sleepovers, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
That was our thing.
Yeah, exactly.
That was our thing.
It really was, and it was always such a fun time. I felt like I could talk to her about anything that we really just, you know,
things we're passionate about, you know?
Yeah,
and this is a nice outlet for us to just talk about whatever.
It is. It really is. This podcast has been something that we've wanted to try for so long, and something that I don't think our parents would be too surprised that we would do, you know?
Absolutely not. I think because of our, I guess our, like, chemistry when it comes to, like, conversations, we get very into it. And we like the same shit, so.
Our outlet is also to bring together people who have the same interests as us, or even just, like, similar interests to us, like the anime, the manga, the true crime, horror, paranormal stuff. So with the title All Things Normal and Paranormal, it's that I think it really encapsulates how both me and Geek really perceive the stuff that we are interested in. Like, mine is more paranormal, true crime, horror, stuff like that, and hers is more on the normal aspect of the nerdiness scale of being, like, an anime, manga, gaming freak, so.
I mean, I'm all that.
More of the gaming, because I really was turned off to anime for quite some time, and it wasn't healthy, because I would dog on anime, and I'd never watched it.
Yep.
And now I can't get enough of a lot of the animes that we do watch, so we watch a lot of, like, Jujutsu Kaisen together, we watch Attack on Titan. She's gotten me more into, like, the BL side of anime as well, and manga.
Yeah.
So, like, Given and Sasuke and Miyano, definitely some stuff that, like, I didn't think that I could get into, because, and also Geek didn't think I was going to get into it because she thought I was going to judge her.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's not that I thought you would judge me, it's that it's not for everybody, you know. There's a lot of, like, there's a lot of triggering things in it. And I guess the aspect of, you know, not a normal romance story is kind of a turnoff for some people. They're like, oh, this is not the normal stereotypical straight kind of characters that you would normally see in.
What I think is that when you showed it to me, I was expecting more of, like, the stereotypical normal romance anime that I had watched with, like, Horimiya and stuff like that. But BL has so much more emotion, in my opinion. I really think it does. And more of the backstories are kind of tragic.
Yeah, a lot of GL and BL, I feel like they have more of a connection.
I think the tragedy comes from it not being accepted for quite some time.
Yeah.
So there's more tragedy to stories like that, because it's more of, like, what reality is that, you know, gay marriage not being legal until, like, what, 2012, I think?
Well, a lot of it comes from society And, you know, even though it's a Japanese anime, it's that stereotypical social norm where that's not normal. That's not considered something that's accepted by many, you know, countries as well. Yeah. But it's something I've always liked. It's always, like, been a secret, I guess, guilty pleasure for me. Because, you know, even when I was little, I was reading these, like, love stories. And, like, oh, man, I wish I could see myself like that. Mm-hmm. Or, wow, this is so beautiful. Oh, my gosh. But I have nobody to talk to about it, you know. And it's a lot like, you know, like, the Notebook, all those stereotypical things. But it's, like, those cliches in anime is so cute. Sign of affection, too. Like, that's one of our favorites.
I love a sign of affection. Apothecary Diaries got to get it on with the romance, though, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
eventually.
I love the story of just Mao Mao doing her detective shit, being an apothecary. I think she is badass. I really do.
I love that story.
But I'm ready for her and Jinchi to have some romance, dude. I really am.
Yeah, me too.
And I can't wait for the second season. I really can't.
It ended so quick.
It did. It felt like it ended so quick. So did A Sign of Affection.
Yeah. I mean, that's because we enjoyed it, though. We waited
we watched
for
it every
weekend. Jinx.
But yeah, this whole podcast is just going to be talking about our interests. We're also going to have some segments where we have you guys talk to us about your interests too, and we'll share them on the show. Maybe we'll do a few reviews and analysis of characters, which is going to be really fun. I think analyzing characters in either animes I haven't seen or animes I have seen, I think that would be really fun. I think there's an interesting aspect to stuff like that.
I think so too. I think that, you know, sharing in a way to people that can also have their opinions, you know, it's something for us to just like ramble about. Maybe other people can give us insight into what they think. Maybe other people agree with us on certain things that we like have opinions about, you know, even when it comes to those true crime things.
Yeah. And I'm definitely going to have people submit like true crime stuff that they want us to talk about, even their paranormal stories. Like if you have a personal paranormal story, I think that would be so cool to share, like something that happened to you when you were younger. Anything of that sort, you know?
It's like, have you seen this man kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. That was creepy. Mm-hmm. Remember when we watched that?
Yeah.
That was super creepy.
That was funny that that video had the burner phone and everything, and they kept calling the numbers and stuff.
Yeah, the different numbers and stuff. That was funny.
Yeah, it was.
But, like, you know, it's just an aspect to interact with you guys and to just air out what we like to do.
Info dump.
Yeah. We info dump to each other all the time. We thought, yeah, that's boring. Why don't we just info dump to the people on the internet, you know?
Mm-hmm. That's why we got mics. We're like, yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, spent $30 a piece on these mics, but they were originally like $80.
That's really cheap, honestly.
It is. Amazon, bro. Plus, I got the Amazon card, so.
I mean, I did have a mic, but it's not here, so.
It's back at home. Today, we're also going to be doing a second part to our show, where we will talk about a true crime case that kind of hits home for both of us. Mostly me, due to the fact that a person involved in this case did go to my high school. But we'll get into that a little bit later. Right now, we're kind of just info dumping about stuff that we like to do, you know? We have a lot of facts on this case as well. I did research all day. It is like, what time is it? It's like 5 o'clock, and I started researching at like 10 o'clock this morning.
Mm-hmm.
I did a lot, dude.
And you were pretty into it. For sure.
I was, and 9 pages later, and here I am. Hopefully I can fit this all into like an hour-long episode, you know?
Yeah, I'm glad you're shedding light on it. I mean, when it comes to a lot of these things, you know, when you hear about like, you know, tragedies, when it comes to especially places that you had some kind of connection to. I mean, that was your school.
Yeah.
He was in.
He was a security guard. That was the most wild part.
That
and
is.
And he was only 2 years older than my brother. Like,
it's sad. It's unfortunate.
It is sad. And I feel like this case really fell off because nobody's talking about the update that happened just like 2 days ago.
It's so hidden. It feels.
It does feel hidden. It really does. But like, I'm glad that I can share this with people. True crime is one of the things that I really like to listen to. I listen to a lot of podcasts on Spotify, like Horrifying History or Inhuman, the true crime podcast. If you guys want like good podcast recommendations, Inhuman on Spotify and Horrifying History with Brenda. Oh my God, I love that lady. I think she is one of the greatest podcasters. She's from Canada, and the stuff that she just talks about is just so cool. What do you think?
Yeah, I like listening to Brenda, like her podcast. I think that kind of inspired us to do some of it too.
Yeah, I think that inspired a little bit of it. I think hers is more on the aspect of, like, you know, how paranormal stuff can, you know, interact with, like, historical events, or how paranormal stuff interacts with historical events. But definitely go check her out. If you don't find her on Spotify, just look up the Darkcast Network, and that is the stuff that she's a part of. So definitely something to get into. What else should we talk about?
Maybe, like, future things that I want to get into. I mean, like, whether or not we should set up the Patreon, or, I mean, for the gaming aspect, I've always wanted to do something like Game Grumps, where they have the commentary. If you are into that.
I think that would be fun. Like, if we did, like, a little YouTube stuff with, like, me doing some commentary while I watch you play the game, because I'm not much of a game person. I play, like, 3 games, maybe, and I can't even play them here because I don't have my PlayStation.
Mm-hmm.
But watching you play a game and like, talking. Just commentating on it, or even just shit-talking the whole time, mm-hmm. I think it would be fun. What else we have planned for this is, like, we'll deep dive into, like, if any horror movies also coincide with, like, true crime cases and stuff like that. Video games will solely be for Geek to kind of figure out, and me to just, you know, commentate on, because games aren't my thing. Manga is more her thing, too. I mean, I can give you some info on, like, the one manga that I've read. Maybe even, like, the ones that I get spoiled for on TikTok, but that's about it.
Constantly, she gets spoiled.
Oh, yeah. I'm so done with the fact that, like, I've been spoiled on just about everything that I watch.
I mean, like, one time you were, like, just going through TikTok, and then you got a My Hero spoiler, and you're like,
God. I got a My Hero spoiler, then I got a Chainsaw Man spoiler. That was the worst!
for that one scene.
The absolute worst was getting the Chainsaw Man spoiler. Yeah. I'm not going to say anything in case nobody's caught up on this manga, but that Chainsaw Man spoiler literally ruined my day.
Yeah, I remember your face.
It did. I was God, like, you've got to be fucking kidding me. This is so stupid. I can't believe that fucking happened.
If you want to cry, read Chainsaw Man and Nana. Friendly reminder.
To be fair, I have not seen Nana yet. She is trying to get me to watch Nana and Banana Fish.
Oh, boy.
I don't know if I am mentally ready for the stuff that I'm about to see. Just based off the stuff that I've seen on TikTok, I don't know if I am mentally prepared to be heartbroken by not only a BL, but a GL as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's GL undertones. It's not canon, but, I mean, there's a lot of, like, if she were a guy, I would be with her kind of thing, you know?
If Nana was a guy, she would be...
The love of my life.
The love of my life. Like, that's heartbreaking.
Yeah.
That sounds like just... That line in general just sounds heartbreaking.
I mean, yeah, she's accepted the fact that, you know, she's not a guy, but she doesn't think that she's gay, so it's like, you know, they want to be together, but not in that way.
Yeah.
And I mean, for people that have been in the closet, like I have been for a long time, there's kind of, you kind of get that one relationship where you're like, oh, well, if they were a guy, then this would be normal, you know, like, it kind of sheds light on that feeling of being like, you know, I really like this person, but not as a friend, but if I say anything, it will ruin it.
Yeah.
Because they don't think of me that way.
Yeah. I just can't wait to watch them.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Banana Fish, you're gonna cry.
I unfortunately have not avoided any spoilers from Banana Fish. But I still know that I'm gonna be heartbroken just based off of, like, the detail that it's gonna go into, you know? But everything is a journey with anime, because I definitely have had my journey. I share all of my edits on TikTok for animes, and Geek does too, but not, like, not as much as I do, you know? Geek just shares the love of anime on TikTok.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Also included with our podcast, we will be doing a conjoined X account plus our own separate X accounts and a joint Instagram account. And by the time this episode airs, then we will have those Instagram accounts ready to have people start following us.
Yeah, just get the word out, and you know.
Definitely going to start getting the word out with this. People at work are going to be like, this is interesting. Why don't I do it? I support everybody else at work. Everybody else has their own like careers and stuff, like music careers and everything. Mm-hmm. So why not support them as well? Like, have them support me. Come on. May not be doing music, but I am doing a podcast. It's kind of fun. No? Oh, share the manga that you read. Like the ones you have upstairs and stuff in the house.
So I have kind of a small manga collection going. So a lot of the manga I read is basically either romance or shonen. So like I have Full Metal Alchemist, I have Legend of Zelda, I have these.
Legend of Zelda has a manga?
Yeah, Twilight Princess.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I like the art style of that one. Link look really cool. Really cool.
I have like two manga series. One of them is Junji Ito. So I have the Tomoe book. That was given to me by my ex. So that wasn't even originally mine. And I have Apothecary Diaries. I have the first two volumes of that. I do want to start collecting like Jujutsu Kaisen manga. That would be really cool. Let's talk about that one. That one you really like. Where the Sunspot one?
Yeah, Where the Sunspot. Okay. Yeah, I love that one. That was like the first BL I've ever.
It looks really seen. Cute. And it wasn't ever anime adapted, was it?
No. There was, however, a live action, a Japanese live action. I have yet to see that.
I did see something about that when I was looking at Pinterest the one day.
It's cute. I'm looking forward to seeing it. There's another one called My Love Mix Up. That's another one I want to see. But I Have the Sunspot is about two characters. I don't know how to pronounce their names. So the one has a disability. You know, he has a hearing impairment. Mm-hmm. He can't hear. This guy has been struggling academically. And then this other guy comes in. And so endlessly kind. He just helps him with his academic work. He's there with them every day. The man with a disability cooks for him. You know, they share snacks at the end of the day. They do homework together. It's just so wholesome. And you get to see their story progress, like, eventually into adulthood, and they still want to be together. Aww. But, it's a slow burn, so it's like a romantic undertone. Burn. Yes.
That's yeah. Really
they care deeply for each other. So as time goes on, their relationship grows, and they grow as individuals. But there's always that common, like, affection between each other where they're like, oh, I care about you, but I don't want this to end, so what should we do? Oh, wait, I'm gay.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, that sounds really cute. I think that'd be something that I would read.
It is so cute.
Something that I forgot to mention is that not only did Geek introduce me to BL, it took me down a fucking rabbit hole. Absolute fucking rabbit hole. To now I read BL manhwa, so the Korean version of manga. And it's interesting. Definitely if you're into stuff like that, give it a try. It's not too bad.
Yeah, manga, manhwas, you know, like even like myself, manhwas. I've gotten into Heaven Officials. I gotten into
That's a Donghua.
Oh, Donghua?
Donghua is Chinese. Manhwa is Korean.
Oh, there's two.
Huh?
There's two. So there's the M-A-N-H-W-A, and there's the M-A-N-H-U-A.
Yeah, manhwa. The Chinese one is pronounced differently than the Korean one. But yeah, but donghua is another version of it as well. I think donghua is like what MXTX writes, so the novel version. But manhwa is like more of the panels and everything with pictures. But yeah, if you're newer to BL, do not read the very bad manhwas, please. Because I am traumatized from quite a bunch of them. Like, Killing Stalking, not a BL. As much as people want to say it is not. And it traumatized me. Same thing with Obey Me. Do not read that either. Because both of those will make you question your life choices completely. Other things like Jinx that just ended its first season. Which, honestly, I can't wait for season 2. I cannot wait. What about you?
When I got into Lost in the Cloud.
She got me into that one.
It's my favorite, probably, Korean one.
I think Lost in the Cloud is good.
Lost in the Cloud.
Shut up. I think Lost in the Cloud is
Lost
a good one.
Lost in the Cloud.
It's a good one for you because you don't read the same stuff that I do. Jinx is more my speed, even though you just got into it, you know. You like Jinx, right?
I like the story.
I like the story, too. If you get past the lightsaber...
the Star Wars...
That's what it's referred to. The storyline is great. The next season is going to be the chasing arc for Jinx, and I am super excited about that. And Lost in the Cloud, we are not completely caught up on it. We are only on chapter 98. Everybody else is on like chapter 102, and I don't understand where they're getting it from. So if anybody has any way of telling me where I can get those chapters,
that'd be great.
That would be amazing.
Yeah, I mean, legally, of course.
Yes, legally. Nothing illegal, because I do not want to be hounded by the establishment that I work for. So I think that's a good thing for introductions at the moment. What do you think? We should get into the case, right? Okay, so I think we're ready to get into the true crime case now that I have spent hours on. So the case that we're going to be doing today is the Brian Koberger, Idaho murder case. As I said, this hits kind of close to home for me and Geek, mostly because Brian Koberger went to my high school, graduated 2 years before my brother, and was a security guard at my high school. So, it's been a bit interesting reading about this case and even watching the documentary on, HBO Max. If you guys ever want to check it out, it probably has more information than I'm putting in here right now. But we'll get started with a rundown of this case, where it started, how it's going, and any other updates. So let's get into it. Okay. So around 4:25 in the morning in the rural college town of Moscow, Idaho, on the 13th of November, 2022, four University of Idaho students, 20-year-old Ethan Chapin, 21-year-old Kaylee Gonzalez, 20-year-old Zanna Kernodle, and 21-year-old Madison Mogan were stabbed to death in their off-campus residence by a masked assailant. There were two other roommates in the house at the time, 21-year-old Dylan Mortensen and 21-year-old Bethany Funk, who were also home but left unharmed that day. Earlier in the night of November 12th, Ethan Chapin and Zanna Kernodle were reportedly at an on-campus party at the Sigma Chi fraternity where Ethan Chapin was a member. They returned to the residence at around 1:45 on the 13th. The same evening, Madison Mogan and Kaylee Gonzalez had gone to a downtown sports bar called the Corner Club at around 10 p.m. and left around 1:30 a.m. Mogan and Gonzalez were seen in a Twitch live stream from the grub truck at 11:41 a.m. before being picked up by what police say was a private party vehicle and arrived to their home at 1:56 a.m. According to the statements made by surviving roommates Mortensen and Funk, who returned home at 1 a.m., all four students were home by or before 2 a.m. From the times of 2:26 to 2:52, Kaylee Gonzalez made seven attempts to call her former longtime boyfriend, who was also a fellow student at the University of Idaho. Madison Mogan also made three attempts of contact with the same guy at 2:44 to 2:52. Police investigated and deemed that the former boyfriend did not have any involvement in the crimes committed. At around 4 a.m., just 25 minutes before police say the victims were attacked, Zanna Kernodle had a DoorDash order delivered to her residence. So before we get into some statements from the surviving roommates, I just want to say that a lot of the information in here is very pertinent to the case. Even with the 4 a.m. DoorDash order, it just shows that there were signs of life at around 4 a.m. When Kernodle picked up her DoorDash order from her house. Because these were said to happen between the hours of 4 a.m., between the time of 4 a.m. and 4:25 a.m. So we'll get into the statements from both surviving roommates. So original reports say that both surviving roommates were in their beds on the ground floor at the time of the killings. Neither were attacked or held hostage or had woken up during the killings. However, the probable cause affidavit for the case said that one surviving roommate, believed to be Mortensen, stated she was sleeping on the second floor where Zanna Kernodle and Ethan Chapin resided as well, before she was awakened by what sounded like Gonzalez and her dog. She later stated that she heard one roommate saying something to the effect of, "There's someone here." The roommate stated she believed this was said by either Gonzalez or Kernodle. Investigators were unsure as a forensic download of Zanna's cell phone showed that she was on the app TikTok at 4:12 a.m. The surviving roommate stated that she opened her door twice within a short span of time, and the second time heard what sounded like crying coming from Zanna and Ethan's room, and a male voice saying, "It's okay, I'm going to help you." Security cameras near the home picked up the sound of whimpering, a loud thud, and a dog barking numerous times, starting at around 4:17 a.m. The surviving roommate allegedly opened her door a third time and saw a figure in black clothing and a mask that covered his mouth and nose walking towards her. The man, whom the roommate stated she did not recognize, walked past her and used the sliding glass door to exit. The roommate stated she stood in a frozen shock phase and then locked herself in her room. No 911 calls were made until 11:58 a.m., many hours after the stabbings. The call made at the time was a request of aid for an unconscious person and was placed from within the residence using the cell phone of one of the either roommates, either Funk or Mortensen. When police arrived, the door to the home was open. There was no sign of forced entry or damage inside the home, and nothing appeared to be missing. The no sign of forced entry really makes me think that that sliding glass door was open. It was unlocked.
I agree. I mean, it's kind of random that he just got in without any issues. No sounds, no any alertness. It's just clear passage.
Yeah, definitely don't know the entry point to the house.
Yeah, I mean, it could have been either, you know, the dog was sleeping. A lot of this is nobody noticed.
Yeah.
I mean, he could have gotten through the window. We don't know the entry, but it was silent, and that's devastating.
Yeah, definitely.
Has to be the door. It's sad. It really is.
Nothing appeared to be missing either. Two surviving roommates were inside, as well as other friends of the victims, when police arrived. The surviving roommates had allegedly called friends over to the home because they believed one of the roommates on the second floor was unconscious and not waking up. The identity of the 911 caller was not known to police, but confirmed the caller was not considered a suspect. All four students were pronounced dead by noon. Detectives stated that they believed the killings occurred sometime between 4 a.m. and 4:25 that morning. Officers came upon Gonzalez's dog, which she shared with her ex-boyfriend, alive and unharmed in the house. And I think the ex-boyfriend is who she tried to make contact with like 7 times at around 2 a.m.
Still nothing.
I think they had just recently broken up is what I read, that like they had just recently broken up and he really didn't want to talk to her at the time.
Maybe he didn't realize. I mean, obviously he didn't realize the extent of the situation.
No, nobody.
He just thought she was trying to talk to him.
In the next part of this, I'm going to get into some stuff about the victims of this case, just because I want people to know what these students, what these young adults could have been if their life hadn't been cut so short by somebody as deranged as the person that did this. So, 20-year-old Ethan Chapin of Conway, Washington, was majoring in sports management and a member of the Sigma Chi fraternity. Chapin is a triplet and is survived by his parents and siblings, Maisie and Hunter Chapin, who were also enrolled to the University of Idaho. In quote, "Ethan lived his best life. He loved the social life, intramurals, and tolerated the academics. He also continued to play sports." It was stated by one member of the family. It was unsure who stated that. For 21-year-old Kaylee Gonzalez of Rathdrum, Idaho, she was majoring in general studies and a member of the Alpha Phi sorority. She grew up together in northern Idaho with Madison Mogan and is survived by her parents and sister. Mogan and Gonzalez were such close friends that they were practically sisters. They had just celebrated Madison Mogan's 21st birthday in May. Gonzalez's sister stated she had everything going for her, absolutely everything. She had her job lined up and she had worked really hard for it.
I really sympathize with that. I mean, That's a lot like us, you know. Yeah. It's just, I can't imagine having just not realizing it's your last day on top of that, and just also having that connection with somebody. That's how I feel, like, with you. Like, you have such a strong personality, and I care for you deeply. I just can't imagine, like, losing you instantly like that one day and not knowing that it was your last day. It's just heartbreaking to me.
I think that is really sad. I think even, like, these statements from the family are really important because it just shows how good these people were and how tragically their lives got cut short because of some crazy person.
They really didn't live.
They didn't. Kaylee Gonzalez was a senior. She was about to graduate college. And Ethan was only a freshman. He had just started college.
That's not right.
It's not at all. And,
I mean, he's still underway. Like, he's still being investigated now, right?
Koberger?
Yeah.
He is.
It's just, it's insane to me. Like, what else? Why is it to this extent? It's being delayed purposely.
Yeah.
But it's like these kids died.
Yeah. And it's
barely lived.
It's absolutely heartbreaking that they're still trying to prolong this process for absolutely no reason.
Ridiculous.
So we're moving on to 20-year-old Zanna Kernodle of Avondale, Arizona, who is majoring in marketing and a member of the Pi Beta Phi sorority. Zanna is survived by her parents and her older sister, Jasmine Kernodle, who said in a statement, "You rarely get to meet someone like Zanna. She was so positive, funny, and was loved by everyone who met her." Kernodle was roommates with Kaylee Gonzalez and was in a relationship with Ethan Chapin. 21-year-old Madison Mogan of, forgive me if I am mispronouncing this, but Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. She was majoring in marketing and a member of the Pi Beta Phi sorority. She is survived by both of her parents. I didn't find any siblings in my research, but I do know that both of her parents have been speaking out on her behalf. Mogan had known Kaylee Gonzalez since her junior high years. Gonzalez's mother even said that the two were best friends. She had plans after graduation in the spring to move to Boise, Idaho. Now we are getting into our guilty party. The perpetrator of this horrible crime is named Brian Christopher Koberger. Koberger is 28 years old as of 2022, 30 as of 2024. And is described as a student, media face, and entrepreneur, in quotations. Koberger is from Albrightsville, Pennsylvania. He attended Pleasant Valley School District in Broadheadsville, Pennsylvania, from elementary to high school. He studied at Northampton Community College, where he earned his associate's in psychology, and at DeSales University for his, quote-unquote, higher education. He later was studying as a PhD student in criminology at Washington State University at the Pullman campus. Apart from this, he was also serving as a teaching assistant. Now we're getting into the timeline after the crime was committed. On Wednesday, November 29th, 2022, police in Moscow, Idaho put out an APB or BOLO for a 2011 to 2013 white Hyundai Elantra as it was seen on the morning of the killings in the immediate area of the off-campus residence. This make and model is the same vehicle description registered to Brian Koberger, according to the affidavit. On December 7th, 2022, police were looking to speak with the driver of the vehicle described. Anyone with information was asked to call the tip line. And on December 13th, as the one-month mark of this tragedy was upon the city of Moscow, police captain Roger Lanier stated that the police were closely guarding information that they had discovered at the scene and the investigative information due to wanting to protect the integrity of the investigation. Captain Lanier promised, in quote, This investigation is not cold. We get tips every day that are viable. Those tips help us do everything from clear people to further some of the theories that we are working on. Eventually, we are going to narrow in on exactly what happened and who did it. On Friday, December 15th, 2022, Koberger is involved in a routine traffic stop by Indiana police for traffic violations. He was stopped twice, once by the Hancock County Sheriff's Office for speeding, and then by Indiana State Police for following a car too close. He and his father were driving back to Pennsylvania after Brian's semester at Washington State ended in the same month. On Tuesday, December 27th, Moscow authorities stated that the DNA had been recovered from a knife sheath left on one of the victim's bed. That same day, in Pennsylvania, a lab had determined that DNA from trash that Pennsylvania State Police recovered from the Koberger residence was the father of the person who left DNA on the knife sheath. On Friday, December 30th, Koberger is officially arrested in the Pocono Mountains early in the morning. And then on Tuesday, January 3rd, 2023, Koberger appeared in court for the first time in Monroe County, Pennsylvania, and agreed to be extradited to Idaho. Koberger's attorney stated that his client, in quote, is eager to be exonerated of these charges and looks forward to resolving these matters as promptly as possible. That, in my opinion, is probably the most disgusting quote that I have seen, other than the, don't worry, I'll help you, from the night of the killings. I honestly think that it is the worst possible thing. I don't care if they're defending somebody, I really don't. It just bugs me so much that my client is eager to be exonerated of these charges.
It just makes you feel like he doesn't want to be liable, even though he's the one that committed that.
Exactly.
Where's the accountability?
Mm-hmm.
Where's the punishment? Because he's trying, clearly, he doesn't want to be responsible for that, even though he's the one that committed these things.
Exactly.
It's clear.
Mm-hmm.
It's clear that's him.
I don't understand. Like, I understand that people need to defend people
for
their jobs,
yeah.
But I just feel it's like sickening. that was a disgusting quote, in my opinion.
It's sickening. It's the reality of it, that at the end of the day, that's their job, and whether they like it or not, you have to do what you're asked.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't imagine defending somebody who obviously is not in the right.
Yeah, I don't know how lawyers do it. I really don't.
It's really sad, actually.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know that inevitable
because you
outcome.
Know that you're, like, especially with, like, guilty people, yeah. Like, you know your client did it, and you have to fight against people who know that he did it as well,
mm-hmm.
and say he didn't do it. I feel like that's just so fucking stupid.
It's not
stupid. It just seems like immorally wrong. And I'm not saying anything against lawyers. I believe lawyers have a very high respected profession. I just don't understand how y'all do it. I don't.
I don't know how they take that kind of responsibility, I guess. I don't know. How they take into account, like, yes, I'm aware of what's happening. I'm aware that the evidence is set against us. I'm aware that this person may be responsible for this, but, like, this is what I have to do because I'm asked to do it.
And it's my job.
It's my job. And whether I like it or not, I'm going to make sure this person gets out. Like, that's kind of sick.
It's sick and it's sad.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people, like, you know, these people could have families and these people could have kids the same age or even nieces and nephews. They have to defend a person who is absolutely in the wrong.
It sucks. It sucks. There's no way around it and there's nothing else to say.
This is no disrespect to lawyers whatsoever. This is
exactly.
Honestly just us questioning how you guys fucking do it.
I don't have the strength to do that.
I would cry and I would be like, you know what? He is fucking guilty because I can't.
Oh, well.
I can't morally say that I would be able to defend somebody like that. Like,
mm-hmm.
I just don't understand it. But now we're going to get into more of the detail. After that, he was extradited to Idaho the next day. So on the 4th of January, 2023, he was extradited to Idaho to face trial. On Thursday, January 5th, Koberger made his first court appearance in Moscow. His charges for the murder for each student were read to him. The judge stated each victim was stabbed and murdered with premeditation, malice, and forethought. That's how brutal that was. On Thursday, January 12th, Brian appeared in court for a status hearing where he waived his right to a speedy probable cause hearing within 14 days and only briefly spoke to answer the judge's question. During the hearing, it was noted that Koberger had roughly a 2-inch cut above his chin, on his jawline, and another cut on his cheek. Defensive wounds, maybe? Possibly. There's no information that if any of the victims actually fought back against what happened to them, but there is information stating that none of them died in pain. Mm-hmm. All of them died very quickly. None of them bled out all night.
It's possible that one of them caught the gist of it and was like, oh, I'm going to die. I need to try to defend myself.
Yeah.
It's possible like one of them had the knife at one point.
Mm-hmm.
Even so, like, just knowing the inevitability, being in that position, oh, I'm not going to win this, is kind of,
yeah,
like, chilling about this story. Like, when you first told me about it, it was like, it kind of feels defeating because you're in that position.
Mm-hmm.
I can't imagine.
It's awful. Koberger's public defender requested 4 to 5 days for the probable cause hearing scheduled for the week of June 26, 2023. And during the time between January 12th and the week of June 26th, he was held in state custody with no bond. We're skipping ahead to about March 2nd of 2023. Court documents from Monroe County, Pennsylvania were unsealed and revealed a cache of items seized from the Koberger residence shortly after Brian was arrested. The items included were medical-style gloves, a silver flashlight, a black sweatshirt, black socks, and a pair of size 13 Nike shoes. An evidence log stated that investigators also recovered knives, a cell phone, black gloves, black masks, laptops, dark-colored clothes and dark shoes, brown boots, and New Balance shoes from the home. The knives that were recovered were a Smith & Wesson pocket knife, and an unknown brand knife in a leather sheath. Koberger also had criminology books in the home, one titled Criminal Psychology, and some notebooks were seized along with a shop vac and other personal documents. Did they seize the shop vac because it was possibly like that he could have, you know, vacuumed up some evidence in there, maybe? Like something was in there? What do you think?
It could have been. I mean, a lot of killers try to, from what I hear, they try to, like, take the blame away from them, even though they know what they did. They try to cover it up as if, like, it's a normal day.
Like, maybe wiped out the evidence from his car, and that's why they seized the shop vac, because those are normally used as, like, car vacuums?
It's probably he regretted it, but not in the moment. And then he just didn't want to be liable for it, so he tried to hide it. Possibly. Even though he's aware of what he did.
Possibly.
I could never.
No.
My anxiety.
Oh my God.
I would never.
Not that we would ever, ever fucking think about killing anybody.
No.
It's just not. That's not morally correct.
I mean, but like the fact he tried to like hide it too is kind of stupid.
I mean, every killer has tried to hide evidence.
That's silly.
It's silly until, you know, it doesn't get them caught for a while. He got caught like, what, 2 weeks later?
Oh my God, like, not it's even inevitable. Like, just accept it.
It's so inevitable.
Be a man.
It's so inevitable that they're gonna get caught.
Like, it's just disgusting that they think they can get away with it, clean their living room rug, and be like, oh yeah, another Monday. Like, no, fuck you.
Yeah, another day, another dollar kind
of
shit.
Yeah, it's
after they
ridiculous.
Just killed 4 young adults in a house.
They barely lived.
Yeah.
They barely lived. That's the frustrating part. Like, he ended their lives, and he went on, like, a typical Monday. No.
It's
go fuck easy. Yourself.
And the fact that he was studying criminology or criminal justice and criminal psychology, just to, like, think about somebody that's studying this stuff, probably going through his head thinking, what can I do with the shit that I just did to get out of it? Because I'm already studying it. I should know the loopholes, right? No, you got caught like a week later, bro.
That sounds haunting. Like, how can I benefit from this class in real life?
And if you've seen Brian's picture online, that man looks fucking crazy. He absolutely does. And it scares me. Just the way he looks is scary and haunting. Like, he has that 1,000-yard stare.
I hope he's locked up for a long time.
Oh, me fucking too, man.
Imagine just going to bed to go to class the next day and then nothing anymore. Like, absolutely just... It's horrifying.
It is. It really is.
And then he acts like it's not a big deal, like, and tries to clean it up. Disgusting.
It is gross. It's absolutely gross.
Yeah.
Okay. So now we're skipping further to May 17th, and a grand jury indicted Koberger on murder and burglary charges. If he was found guilty, he could be facing the death penalty. The following Monday, May 22nd, an Idaho judge entered not guilty pleas on Brian's behalf. Koberger remained silent in being addressed by the judge to give his plea to each charge of murder and burglary. On Friday, June 16th, prosecutors filed a court document stating that Koberger's DNA was a statistical match with DNA found on the murder weapon. The filing said a short tandem repeat analysis was used to compare the samples. On Thursday, June 22nd, Jay Logsdon, Koberger's attorney, submitted a court filing that stated, "There is no connection between Brian Koberger and the victims. There is no explanation for the total lack of DNA evidence from the victims in Mr. Koberger's apartment, office, home, or vehicle." Then, the next day, on Friday, June 23rd, a judge denied two motions to either remove the gag order or to be exempt from it on Koberger. The judge stated that he has a duty to not jeopardize his right to a fair trial since the case against Koberger is high profile. 3 days later, on the 26th of June, the prosecutors announced that they are seeking the death penalty for Brian Koberger.
Good riddance.
He deserves that. Like, how can you even think that he's not guilty?
I mean, so much evidence is stacked against him.
It is. And, you know, he hasn't said a goddamn word in any of his trials. He stayed completely silent. I don't necessarily think that that's like a... that it makes him guilty, but it doesn't make him innocent either. No. It doesn't look good if you just stay quiet.
No, not at all. I don't think he really cares at this point. I think, like his lawyer said, like he just wants to get out of it. He doesn't want that accountability. Mm-hmm. And there's no closure, unfortunately, for those families. They're just...
No, and those families don't have the justice that they need yet.
Exactly. They're not going to feel, you know, like it was worth that time that he was been punished. It just feels probably on their end, they probably feel like defeated. Like, oh, he doesn't understand or care. Mm-hmm. He doesn't understand the effects of his actions. You killed people that barely lived their lives.
Yeah.
Multiple people and families have no closure from it. And you want to get out. That is your only goal.
Yeah.
Not understanding what you did.
Yep. All right, skipping ahead to about August 2nd, Koberger's attorney said that they would use an alibi defense for Brian, but they were unable to pin down his exact location on the night of the 12th and early morning on the 13th of November because he was, quote unquote, driving during those time frames. His attorney stated, in quote, "Mr. Koberger is not claiming to be at a specific location at a specific time. At this time, there is not a specific witness to say precisely where Mr. Koberger was at each moment of the hours of the attacks." That right there should just tell you that if there is no alibi because he was driving around, that's all you can say is that he was driving around. Guess what? He could have driven anywhere. Could have driven, you know, to the crime scene. So this just puts him...
Just a little stroll at night, yeah. Conveniently placed at the location of those murders.
Yeah, and his phone did ping on the towers near that house.
What is he trying to do? Like, is he trying to get out of
I feel
his...
like this attorney is just stupid. Sorry to say, but like... Not claiming to be at a specific location or at a specific time. There's no specific witness to say precisely where Mr. Koberger was. This motherfucker has no alibi. There is no alibi. His phone pinged near the house, and his car was spotted in the immediate area of the house. You have no alibi, dude. None whatsoever.
What are you trying to run from? The reality?
Like, there's just no alibi. So you doing an alibi defense, what is that gaining you? Anyway.
Let me buy $20.
Then on Wednesday, August 23rd, Judge John Judge, that's funny, agreed to delay Brian's trial that was initially set to start October 2nd, 2023. And as of November 21st, 2023, a new trial date has not yet been set. The same day, Koberger's attorney filed a motion to dismiss the indictment against Brian. They had cited a biased grand jury, inadmissible evidence, and lack of sufficient evidence and prosecutorial misconduct by withholding exculpatory evidence. I don't know what exculpatory. No, exculpatory. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. But like, cited biased grand jury, inadmissible evidence, and lack of sufficient evidence. I mean, the evidence is stacked against him. The knife sheath had his DNA on it. And they only found that out because they went through the Koberger's trash. But, you know, still.
The DNA component is there. The location is there. The phone is there. The shock vac being conspicuously placed.
Yeah.
Like, what else are you trying to cover, my guy?
I don't even know.
Accountability? Your ass?
Skip ahead to Thursday, September 28th. Prosecutors demanded customer information from Amazon regarding the purchase of knives as part of their investigation. Motherfucker was purchasing knives on Amazon? For what? And on Thursday, October 26th, the judge denied one of the two dismissal requests for the indictment against Koberger. As of November 2023, the judge's decision regarding the other request has not been released. These are the latest updates from December up until just about 3 days ago, as of right now, so on April 11th of 2024. December 21st, 2023, ABC News published an article with the headline of Idaho College Killings, Prosecutors Ask for Trial to be Set for Summer of 2024. The article states, in a new filing Thursday, prosecutors note Moscow High School students Moscow High School's close proximity to the courthouse, especially in light of the expected media presence and other increases in activity whenever the capital murder trial does kick off. Prosecutors also said that Koberger's team has already had enough opportunity to offer an alibi and asked the judge to consider the matter addressed and closed. On Monday, February 12, 2024, KBOI Channel 2 Idaho News published an article with the headline, Brian Koberger's murder trial date could be set later this month. The article opens with Moscow, Idaho, CBS 2. Brian Koberger, the man charged with first-degree murder in the deaths of four University of Idaho students, will be in court at 2 p.m. on February 28th. Judge John Judge asked his lawyers to prepare to discuss dates for a trial along with their motion for change of venue, a discovery cutoff deadline, expert disclosure deadlines, and deadlines for filing pretrial motions. The hearing will be open to the public and streaming on the court's YouTube page. The next one comes on Friday, March 1st. Newsweek, or newsweek.com, published an article with the title, Brian Koberger Judge Angers Idaho Murder Victims' Families. The article opens with, Families of the University of Idaho murder victims expressed frustration on Friday over the failure to set a trial date for Brian Koberger this week. In a statement obtained by Brian Enton of News Nation, the families of Kaylee Gonzalez and Zanna Kernodle said, in quote, Why are victims' families so misunderstood? We just want justice for our loved ones. Everyone around can claim that they understand our feelings and sympathize with us, but they never really understand what we want, which is fairly simple. We want communication. We want efficiency in prosecution. We want a court that will make timely decisions, and we want a fair trial. This illusion by everyone involved that they can control what happens is frustrating. A jury will hear the evidence and return a verdict, but we need to get there sooner rather than later. The statement on Friday comes shortly after one of Koberger's hearings this week, where prosecutors and the defense failed to reach an agreement on a start date for his trial. On Wednesday, Koberger's attorney, Ann Taylor, and Lehigh County prosecutor, Bill Thompson, met in court to discuss a possible start date of the trial. The Idaho Statesman reported that Thompson has requested the trial to begin on March 3, 2025, while Taylor has asked for more time to review evidence and information as has requested the trial not to begin until June of 2025. That's wild. You're going to prolong this for 3 years? we're going damn near 3 years at this point. If you're going to just, you know, keep it out until June of 2025, you need that much time to go over evidence. You need a whole year. Are you kidding me? You need over a year to do that?
It kind of feels like they're putting it on the back burner and not prioritizing these families.
Or they're trying to prolong the fact that this guy is guilty and they just don't want to accept it. So we have to go over evidence for a year. For over a year. Because this is from March 1st. We're not even in June yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just, that's baffling to me at that point.
They're taking so much time trying to find just excuses for this guy. It's just...
it's wrong.
A year. A year to just say he's not guilty. It's kind of suspicious.
Like, no wonder the victims' families are mad. Like, I would be mad too if somebody was prolonging my child's murder case that long. All because they don't have enough evidence or they haven't gone over the evidence enough. This happened in November of 2022. It is now April of 2024, and you haven't had enough time to go over the evidence. You need another whole year to go over evidence? That's stupid. That's bullshit. I think that's absolute bullshit. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think that's right at all. I think that these people wanting a fair trial, wanting this evidence to be taken care of and to be discussed thoroughly, that's not something that, like, they should have to beg for. It's not at all. I feel like there's no reason that they should have to do that. Like, his attorneys are just wild for wanting to prolong it that long, honestly. I just don't understand, you know?
I agree. I think it's just, it feels... I mean, I can't imagine how they feel. Just imagine something definitely. Something that changes your life for good. Losing your kid.
Mm-hmm.
Not getting that closure. I know what that's like.
Yeah.
A lot of people do.
It's just... it's wild to me. It really is. But on to the latest update, which is as of April 11th, 2024. Hello, Apollo. I hear you. Sweet baby girl. On April 11th, 2024, Newsweek published another article titled, "Brian Koberger Did Not Stalk Victim Before Murder, Court Hears." I think they're referring to Kaylee Gonzalez because there was a lot of speculation that he was rejected by Kaylee Gonzalez and that's why he did this. But I didn't think that he stalked them in the first place. I think he was just crazy and chose, yeah, these students don't deserve to live. I don't think he really had a reason. I think he just did it, honestly. But to go more into the article, it opens with, "A polling team hired by Brian Koberger's defense has been spreading false information that he stalked one of the four murder victims in the case. A prosecutor has said in court, during a heated court exchange on Wednesday, Dr. Brian Elderman, who supervised a phone poll of 400 potential jurors in an Idaho county for the defense, agreed that one of the questions asked if potential jurors had read, seen, or heard that Koberger stalked one of the victims. In quote, that Mr. Koberger allegedly stalked one of our victims. That's false. You knew that to be false?" asked the prosecutor, Bill Thompson. "I did," replied Edelman. Edelman said he wasn't interested in whether it was true or not, merely that it was being spread to the media and was therefore contaminating potential jurors in the case. As of today, Saturday, April 13th of 2024, no further updates have been made regarding the case. So this case is still open and is still going to trial at this very moment. And if you guys want any updates on the case, definitely let us know in like our Instagram or on our X. Like, hey, I saw this update. And definitely send us either the article or tell us to look up something.
Yeah, let us know your thoughts.
Yeah, definitely.
We're extremely frustrated. We feel for these families.
Because we're the same age as these kids were when they were murdered. It's very hard to fathom that these people are no longer around us and that we're going to be older than they ever were in their lifetime. It's just something that...
I hope they get closure.
I hope they do too. I really do. They're probably grieving so bad right now. And
it's been a whole year of nothing.
It's been almost 2 years of nothing. This November will be 2 years of nothing. And if nothing gets done within 2 years, I feel like that is actually the worst for these victims and for this family. Like all of their families.
I agree.
I don't think that it's fair to have somebody like Brian Koberger being able to have his trial delayed like that when all the evidence is stacked against him. And I may have not gone into a lot of detail regarding how Brian Koberger was, but apparently in his classes, he asked a lot of questions pertaining to how the criminal mind works and how you can tell if somebody is like a murderer or anything like that. Just odd questions that his classmates said were not like Brian at all. And these all happened after the murders. So none of what we're saying here either is glorifying what this man did. I am here to bring light to something that is still ongoing and something that should have never happened. Do I think it was preventable? I don't know. I don't know if this... But I don't think anything like this could have ever really been prevented because I don't know every single detail of what happened. Yeah, it says that it's come up that Brian Koberger was not stalking the one victim of this case. But we don't know that for sure. Nobody knows that. And the only person that could tell us is possibly the victim that he was supposedly stalking, and unfortunately, she is not here to tell that side of the story. And I think talking about this case is really bringing an outlet to how we should be discussing things like this and how much it affects people, especially this being close to home. This is somebody I didn't really know personally, but somebody I'd seen every single day in my sophomore year of high school. It's scary to think that you see somebody on the news that you saw in high school and they've murdered four people.
Yeah, it's like one of those unexpected things. You would not expect a person that you met your whole life.
Yeah. And I'm never gonna say that like, oh, Brian was this, this, and that, and I would never think that he would do anything like that because I didn't know Brian. I did not know Brian Koberger at all. I just saw him and was like, yo, that is security guard Koberger, really. And
I don't know who people are.
No.
And this is the lesson.
Nobody does. And I'm not going to sit here and make this about myself because this is about the four young adults that tragically lost their lives to somebody that shouldn't have been there. I don't know why he was there, because I don't have all the evidence, but he shouldn't have been there. Why did he kill those four? What about those four people made him want to kill them?
It's all unexplained.
It is.
Because he's not gonna confess to it.
No. We don't know, though. He could. He could have a guilty conscience, but as far as I can tell with his attorneys, that man is not confessing to shit.
No. I think he wants to try to draw attention away from what he did. You know, I don't think he really cares at this point. It's been a year. It's been almost 2 years, and there's still that closed kind of...
There's still closure. There's still a lot of this case that we don't know as the public, and only... Moscow PD and maybe Monroe County Sheriff's Department or even Pennsylvania State Police know. But it's just that I chose this case specifically because I had just recently watched the documentary that they did on HBO Max, and I was completely, I will say that I was actually sick to my stomach when I watched my high school show up on a true crime documentary. I've never had that happen. I've never sat and watched a true crime documentary and had something show up where I grew up, where I went to school, just in the background of a murderer's photo. It was chilling, honestly. It really was. But that is the case of the Idaho killings and of Brian Koberger.
And to remind yourself that anything is possible, even despite knowing the people you know.
It is.
It's a lesson, and it's something we look forward to seeing closure for.
Yeah, I look forward to seeing happy updates about this.
Yeah,
that
make sure they get, you know, what they need.
That Madison Mogan's family, Kaylee Gonzalez's family, Zanna Kernodle's family, and Ethan Chapin's family all get the closure that they need. And for the two surviving roommates that had to witness what happened.
The shock, the journey, alive for it.
I hope that, and I read that they're getting some therapy for what they went through. And I hope everything regarding their therapy is going well for them. I hope they are getting the help that they need and they are working through what they lived through. Because that, I cannot even imagine how that must feel.
Very triggering.
To know that you were in the same house with somebody who murdered four of your friends.
Mm-hmm.
That's absolutely heartbreaking. But I think this is where we're going to end the episode. And I did not like being a downer today. I didn't. But this is a case that really needs to be talked about. And I haven't seen anybody talk about the updates from almost 3 days ago, which sucks because I need to know. I would like to know more.
Yeah, me as well. I mean, it's kind of personal for us. You know, it's somebody that was connected to us in a way, like in.
Just in passing.
Yeah.
Even if it was just in passing. And I knew him as a security guard, even though I didn't know him personally.
Yeah, you saw him.
I saw him every day my sophomore year.
Yeah, just passing by, you wouldn't expect it.
No, not at all.
No.
Just
a guy.
Random guy, honestly. But yes. I hope for the four victims' families and for the two surviving roommates that you go on to get the justice that you deserve for Ethan, Zanna, Madison, and Kaylee, because that is all that we want to see. All I want to see is justice for all four of them, and to hope that those two girls that survived to get the help that they deserve and to work through what happened. So we're going to end it here. Next episode, probably not going to be true crime. Probably going to be something related to anime, manga, or video games. We'll probably keep my dark side segments to themselves. And we'll switch back and forth between which ones we want to do, you know?
Yeah, thank you for listening. Thank you for hearing this story. We're going to keep you updated. Hopefully they get the closure they deserve. I mean, we feel for them.
Yeah, definitely. I hope you all enjoyed the first episode of Geek and Ghoul.
Yeah.
All things normal and paranormal. I am Ghoul.
I'm Geek.
And hope you tune in the next time.
See you later.
Bye.
Don't let the ghost get you.